And coming back to your early experiences at Fielding and Platt, and we were talking about your first day, that's where we started talking about this. Do you remember your first day and the kind of introductory experiences that you had there? Were you straight into work?
Yes, absolutely, straight in. I think I got introduced to the engineers, but no, otherwise, absolutely straight in. No previous secretary to show me the ropes. Sometimes you've got, you know, the previous secretary is there over an overlap period. I think the shorthand typists who were working for the engineers at the time would have been helpful. And then, of course, I was only actually there barely a year, I think. But it was a good bit less than a year when I was asked for the first time to move up to the director's corridor, Mr. Whittaker. Mr. Whittaker had a bit of a reputation for getting through his secretaries remarkably quickly. And I hadn't worked for Garfield James for that long and felt sure I wasn't experienced enough. And I said, no, thank you. So he went and he got somebody else, and I think it was within 3 months that girl had gone as well. And I was asked again. And I still tried to say no because I was really happy with sales. And Mr. James explained to me that you really couldn't say no to the director twice. And I think he couldn't say no. So I had to go. I think they didn't often advertise outside unless they had to. If they could fill a job from inside, especially if somebody else had a reasonably decent secretary, a senior man would say, right, I'll have yours. And the lesser manager was stuck with having to replace her. Anyway, I then went over to Mr. Whittaker, and I need not have worried. He was so charming. He was the kindest man. He used to wear half-moon glasses and sort of almost glare over the desk at me, but his eyes were twinkling over these glasses. And I never had any bother with him. He took you by surprise occasionally. You had to... It was a world away from the sales department. He'd suddenly breeze into the office and say, Miss Mathias, can you find me the cricket score at Lord's? And after the initial panic of how on earth do I do that, you'd sort it. So it was a much wider scope. He was the general manager as well as director. He had a lot more dealings with the works. I think he was quite well thought of by the men because he was one of the few directors that used to go down every day at 4 o'clock and just walk round and meet the men and listen to them. He was a lovely man. I think I probably only worked for him for about a year. And we were then getting into the time when Fielding's, I don't know whether they were in difficulty or whether... A takeover was in the wind, but people started getting fired. And I remember so clearly the day my boss came back from Mr. Fielding's office. And he walked so slowly up the corridor and went into his office and summoned me and explained he'd been fired. It was easier to remember the date too, because it was Friday the 13th. And it was quite inhuman, I thought, in that he literally had to pack his desk up and just go. And that same day, his name had disappeared from the door. And I was quite devastated, because you always form a relationship with your boss. Not in any personal way, if you know what I mean, but, you know, you work so closely with a man. And then to see his career shattered was quite awful. But it happened to a lot of men after that, not just him.
Did he ever give any reason why he had been fired?
All I got to hear was that the directors were sort of a bit top-heavy, somebody had to go, and it was him.
Would that have been because he was the most junior director? He was the most recent director to come onto the board? Or... There was no such correlation.
I think that's a possibility. I'd never thought of that before. But yes, I think he was the most recent director. Yeah. After he left, on a number of occasions, I would take my typewriter and go out to his house and type letters for him to apply for other jobs. I met his lovely wife and his children, and that went on for a few weeks until he got another job.
And that was in addition to the work that you were doing at Fieldings?
Yes. I was actually summoned to an office of one of the other directors and quietly told that I really should make sure I am doing this in my own time and that perhaps it wasn't a good idea to do it at all. They clearly didn't approve, but my loyalty to him was stronger than to the company at that time. So I thought, what I do in my own time? Fine. So I carried on, and he did get another job at Ellesmere Port in Cheshire. I don't know whether I should include the next bit. I think within a year, possibly two, I'd heard that he'd committed suicide.
That's hugely sad, and I think it's perhaps a measure of the close relationship that you had with the directors that meant that you felt this emotional connection with him, and yeah, clearly were well liked by him and taken into his family as well.
Yeah. He was just a very kind man. He came over so gruff and intimidating. But as soon as you knew him, you know, he was lovely. Just a pussycat. You've probably heard that saying lots of times from people. Yeah, he was a lovely man.
Did you ever see him when he moved to Ellesmere Port? No, that was the last time you saw him when he moved.
Just helping him get the job by helping write the letters, and that was it then, completely. Yeah. I then had another boss. They actually worked hard to find more work for me. I think it was quite nice. So they obviously didn't want to lose me completely, so they had to fabricate a job because there were no more directors to work for. But the personnel director of the entire group, Mark Phillips, came very occasionally to the company. And I think because of all the redundancies and the possible rumours of takeover, he came more frequently. So I was due to work for him perhaps 1-2 days a week, and for the chief engineer, Ron Green, and occasionally for Christopher Manners. Now, I've forgotten what Christopher Manners' designation was. He had an office in the drawing office, but I'm not sure what he did.
Just making a note of these names, because it'd be lovely to talk about these people in detail. Before we move on to your work after you'd worked for Mr. Whittaker, I wonder if we could just compare the nature of your work, your initial work with Garfield James in the sales department, with the work that you did for Mr. Whittaker, and if you could compare perhaps typical days, firstly, your typical day in the sales department with Garfield James and the nature of your work there, and then a typical day with Mr. Whittaker in working for him.
This is hard after all those years. It really is. I think working for Garfield James was much more structured. Yes, you'd go in the morning fairly early. He would give you a whole load of letters, disappear, and I'd be left to type them up, do the filing, answer the phone, possibly minutes of meetings, things like that. Mr. Whittaker's was much less structured. He wasn't always in the office, and you had to be ready to take dictation at any time, possibly even walking down the stairs as he disappeared. There was still a lot of writing to the companies, but it was more to fellow directors and not always generally concerned with the orders.
Were you always in the offices for both of those jobs? I mean, I know we've talked about the time in the early 60s when you went to London with Garfield James. Was there ever a time that you went out of the office with Mr. Whittaker on any company business?
Not for Mr. Whittaker, but that came with the next job in quite a big way.
And just sticking with the first two jobs, you said that it was more structured with Garfield James. Did that mean that you had more structured lunch breaks, whereas with the job with Mr. Whittaker, it might well be that you grabbed a bite to eat where you could, or was there a kind of structured break system, I suppose, when you worked for him as well?
I don't remember that too clearly, but I think it was, yes. You could have your lunch break in the sales department. And I seem to remember once I got onto the director's corridor, you took sandwiches and had it at the desk when there was a minute. It wasn't a definite break. It's just when you had time.
And where was the director's corridor compared with the sales department?
I wish I could remember clearly. I meant to ask you, have you got a plan? I would love to know. I can clearly remember the director's corridor. It's the sales department that's a little hazy. As you came in from, I think it's Baker Street, the first thing you went through was the car park, where the only, well, on the sort of, like a bomb site outside, any cars could go, and that's where I had to park my little Morris Minor. Then you went through the main gates where the directors could park. It was so very hierarchical, because there was an undercover garage, and only Mr. Fielding got to park there. And all the way along the side of that block, the director's corridor ran on the second corridor. If you went to the end, there was one small door and one private staircase, which the directors and the director's secretaries used, and no others. Very segregated. The first room you came to, if you went through that door, was the boardroom. Hugely impressive. All oak panelled. A great big table with leather blotters all the way down, and a large oil portrait of an elderly Mr. Platt, who of course was long gone by the time I got there, gazing down at everybody. Do you want me to get onto that bit? Because
No, please do keep describing the boardroom. It's fascinating. No one's told us about this before.
Right. Well, that's just it. Hugely impressive, and all leather and oak. On board days, I think it was about once a month, as you can imagine, I was the one that brought in the tea, and had to go up and down and make sure everybody had sharpened pencils, glasses of water, spotlessly clean blotters, no smudges on the blotters, and provide them with tea. And I think they would go across to the canteen, probably a superior area of it for their lunch. The canteen manageress was Mrs. Jones. I think she was Polish. She was quite a volatile little lady, but she cared passionately about her job. She was so conscientious, and I think she did things to a very, very high standard. When she did a special dinner for the directors, if we were very lucky, the director's secretaries would get a little free sample. And I do remember a dish of rhubarbas coming over one day. I'm digressing now, but at Christmas time, Mrs. Jones used to make dozens upon dozens of little iced Christmas cakes, which she would sell to the works. And you could order it specially if you wanted. She was quite an amazing lady and passionate about her work.
And was she was the one that brought refreshments during board meetings, was she?
Yes, she would sometimes send one of her minions, but it never got as far as the boardroom, only my office, and I would then take it on in to the boardroom.
And how did you know when you had to take refreshments through? Were you given a phone call?
Oh, yes, and occasionally, sometimes a phone call, sometimes my own boss would just put his head round the door. Yes, and demand sustenance, yeah.
And what did it feel like to walk into a board meeting? How many people would have been on the board, do you remember, sitting around the table?
I was so intimidated, I don't remember clearly, and you don't look at faces because that's not the done thing. But I remember in the early days in my time there, the chairman then was Sir Charles Hill. Jim Fielding took over that later. And one of the other board members was the Honourable Nicholas Ridley, who I believe was an MP, or he certainly became one later. The others would have been some of the directors of the other companies in the group. Court Works is one. I don't remember the others. It was about six or seven other members in the Heenan group.
And how were you greeted, I suppose, in the boardroom? Were you verbally thanked for bringing in the refreshments, or was it just your presence wasn't even acknowledged?
My presence wasn't acknowledged by anybody except my own boss. Whether it was Mr. Whittaker or Mark Phillips, you'd always get a nod of thanks, which was fine. That's all you expected.
And then you were very relieved to make it out of the room.
Absolutely. The worst thing was to get the tray in with possibly 8 to 10 cups and tea and get the door open by yourself and get in there with that tray. Yes.
And how regularly did they hold these board meetings?
It was once a month, I believe. Yes.
Do you remember any particular smells of the boardroom? Did it smell of the leather and the oak?
Yes, I suppose it was. Leather, oak, furniture polish. Yes.
And thinking of furniture polish, was it a special cleaner that just cleaned that area, or was it the general cleaners from the works that would have also cleaned the boardroom as well?
I believe it was a special one, yes. Most of the time, just one or two. The one who did it always did it, you know. Always. Others completely would do the draftsman's office, the drawing office. Yeah.
Gosh. And something that I was fascinated to hear when you initially began describing the boardroom was that oil painting.
Yes.
of Mr. Platt. Can you just describe what that looked like for us, please? Because no one else has ever mentioned that.
Well, in those days, I was much less interested in history than I am now, so I couldn't honestly say how long ago it was painted, how old he was, but it was clearly not recent. I don't know, 1930s, possibly. Just a gentleman in his 50s, looking down on us all, yes.
And what was he wearing, do you remember?
A fairly stiff collar and suit, and it was a darkish painting, so, you know, I don't remember any more than that.
He was standing, just looking down. There were no other affectations to the picture. He wasn't holding anything,
no.
Or there wasn't anything else in it.
No, just a head and shoulders portrait. And you have to wonder, where is that portrait now?
That's exactly what I'm thinking. I wonder what happened to that.
Yes, I mean, surely it wasn't just thrown on the skip when somebody must have had it, one would think.